Ladies and gentlemen, tonight at UFC 300, we continue to reveal the UFC Hall of Fame class of 2024 with our entrant into the fight wing, and you likely remember where you were on that fateful night in 2010. Dateline, Oakland, California. And you know what? We're not gonna bury the lead. I hate to break it to some of you. The bad guy's going to the Hall of Fame. The newly minted UFC Hall of Famer, Chael P. Sonnen, and of course,
one more.
Anderson Silva will join him.
Hall of Fame?
What do you think, Daniel?
This is a big honor for you.
Ugh. You are working with a Hall of Famer. Can you believe it?
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Good Guy, Bad Guy. I'm Daniel Cormier. That is Hall of Famer Chael P. Sonnen. Chael, you get to the knowledge or the news that you're going into the Hall of Fame. And Chael, as he always did, your dance partner no sells you and he doesn't show up. Come on, Anderson. Where was he, Chael? You can't depend on him even today.
Yeah, man, I got to tell you, that thing was so fun. I never envisioned this, and Glenn Jacobs helped us set up. I had no idea until that came out of John Anik's mouth. And even when he said it, he didn't say my name. He said, the bad guy. And I sat there, Daniel, and I thought, well, they used to call me the bad guy. Like I had one of those moments. It was just fun, man. It was so exciting. How many times do you get to be excited in your whole life, particularly as an adult or an adult father? Mm-hmm. Like, it's my job to provide some excitement. I don't get to be excited. It was very cool, and I was very grateful.
You know, Chael, when I was sitting there,
right there
watching
I
you,
turned to Megan
I recognized
Levy.
Very... I watched it and I was recognizing real quick. I said, oh my God, Chael doesn't know. I go, Chael doesn't know. You were sitting there thinking that you were part of something else. So we get the news in our ear going, Chael's going into the Hall of Fame. He has no idea. He thinks he's up here to do something different. So you're telling me as they're ushering you down to the octagon, you have no idea and you found out right then whenever you saw the highlight package playing?
Yes, and Daniel, Megan Olivia will at times during a broadcast do a quick thing. She'll be like on the ring of the octagon and she'll just do a quick setting up the next match. I was brought in to set up the BMF title and what it means, why we have this title. I mean, I'd rehearsed it. I had the whole thing down. When I get to the floor, I'm right up front. Like, I got maybe the best seat in the house right behind yours, and it says my name on the chair. And I remember thinking, wow, for this little 10-second spot, they sure did give me a good seat. I never put that together, man. I never figured it out. Even when he said the bad guy, I really thought, you know, they're doing the baddest guy title, and they're doing this whole thing, and I thought that moniker was just slipping away. I really, truly thought, boy, that's something they used to call me, and I just sat in my seat and waited for my time to do the interview with Megan. She's the one that had to tell me. I turned to her, I said, Megan, what is happening right now? And she said, you're going to the Hall of Fame.
It is a tremendous thing to watch. Every time a guy gets recognized for what they did, and Chael, that is a fight that definitely is one of the ones that has stuck with me for a real long time. And you should be in the Hall of Fame because I believe that you did a great job in moving this sport forward. And any guy that takes part in moving the sport forward has a place amongst the greats, and that's absolutely where you deserve to be. I remember looking back and watching you. And I'm sitting there watching the highlight package, right? So I've got a choice, Chael. I can watch this highlight, which is something that I remember being one of the funnest nights that I've ever been a part of as a spectator and as a friend. Or I can turn back to you and give you a hug or, you know, and go and share in your moment. I don't want to share in your moment. I reach over, I give you a little slap of the hand, and I get back to watching the highlight because I want to get thrown back to that night in Oakland, California, which is a phenomenal night, phenomenal fight where you did something nobody at the time thought could be done because Anderson was so dominant. It was an amazing night. Congratulations to both you guys as you guys go into the Hall of Fame for one of the best fights that I've ever seen.
Thank you, buddy. That is so sweet and so beautiful. I mean, I got to tell you, Daniel, I've never felt good about a loss, and nothing's changed in my life. Like, I didn't wake up and all of a sudden they reversed the decision, or I wake up and I got a rematch and I beat him, but I got some praise for it. I must tell you, it feels very good to get a pat on the back. There's not very many things you can do as a career in life where people will see your work and then tell you that they appreciated your work. And that's the best I can do because I want to be grateful in this moment. I want to be humble. But yeah, it was very exciting. I mean, one of the worst moments, the ones that's kept me up at night, Daniel, is now the one that keeps me up from excitement. And I lost. And that's a little bit weird, but here I am.
In these, it's in sports like this and wrestling where you can earn even when it doesn't go your way. And I believe that you earned on the night, Chill. Chill, we're going to get to UFC 300, which was, in my opinion, the greatest night of fights I've ever seen. I've got some ideas as to why. But before, we had a ton of breaking news at the post-fight press conference. Dana announced that Michael Chandler finally gets an opportunity to fight Conor McGregor June 29th in Las Vegas. How exciting was it to get... I mean, it was machine gun fight announcements at the end of, at the press conference when normally Dana tries to stray away from announcing fights on the night of an event. But we got the big one. We got Conor Chandler. It finally has a date. How exciting is it to know that the notorious one is back?
All right, hey, there's a few things to unpack here. Now, I'm going to go down a road, and I already can see you. I can see you laughing at me, and I can see you dismissing me. But hear me out through your laughter and your dismissal, because I talked to Michael Chandler. I said, man, I'm going on with DC later today, and I want to look good. Is there anything that you can give me that I can then share, that I can say I got this right from you? And he goes, well, a couple of things. He said, I this is public, but I'll give it to you anyway. He said, I knew about the fight. We actually had this fight done for a period of time. And I want to say it was almost like 3 weeks. It sounded like right after 299 in Miami, they got it done. But I asked him something very poignant, Daniel. And I said, okay, the weight class has been speculated. Where is it? And he said, Chael, please let the world know Conor was a good little boy and did as I told him. I'm the one that said 170 because I want him at his strongest. Whether that's exactly how it went or not, I told Chandler I would repeat the quote. Now, here's where I'm getting to the point, partner. One thing that has not been told to us by Dana White is that this is the main event. And the reason I bring that up, if we are to look at history as the trajectory to the future, Dana White has never had an international fight weekend that he did not cap off with a world title. You and I have long speculated that perhaps one of the holdups to McGregor was the placement, that they didn't want to main event him. So I just asked Chandler that. I said, hey, are you told this is a main event? Does it say those words in your bout agreement, in a text message from the boss? Chandler says, no, it doesn't. And I know why you're asking. He said, but it is five rounds. And Conor wanted three. Conor lobbied to try to get three. And so I said, well, look, that could be because he knows this isn't the main event. Chandler said, maybe. He said, I think it's the main event. I see the road you're going down. I've heard you and Daniel talk about it. I think it's the main event. He said, but no, to your question, I have never specifically been told that.
You know, I love that. And Conor won three rounds is smart by Conor because when you're coming back after an injury like that, you want a short fight. Chris Weidman in his return fight with Brad Tavares, while he did get beat up, imagine if that was two more rounds of Brad Tavares kicking at that leg, beating up those legs that is surgically repaired. Conor McGregor wanting three rounds makes sense, but he won't get three rounds. He's going to get five because it's going to be the main event. Now, the one hold up for me, and I believe that people in their excitement miss out on things that are still very important, Chael. Dana said there's no deal in place for the fight. I don't want to be Debbie Downer, Chael, but even in that moment, he goes, Conor Chandler, June 29th, Islam versus Dustin. We got Strickland versus Paulo Costa. He never said, he specifically said, Chael, there is no deal in place for the Conor McGregor fight, but hopefully we can get it done. So are we once again jumping the boat with our excitement level? I have tried to really calm my excitement. I've tried to stay reserved. I've tried to protect my heart, Chael. I've tried to protect my heart. I don't want to get hurt. I want to be able to go to the T-Mobile Arena and watch Conor McGregor fight against Michael Chandler. So I've tried to stay reserved.
Yes.
But when I hear
yes
him say, there's no deal in place, it makes me go, oh, man. Because I was hoping once I heard Conor versus Chandler, it was done. It was a done deal. Because publicly we have seen twice. Conor's announced it. Dana's announced it. Chandler has gone around the world announcing it for the last year and a half. Everyone's announced it, and it's never happened. Now we just got another announcement last week, but the same issue stands There is no deal in place, Chael.
Daniel, I must tell you, you're breaking that news to me. I listened to that press conference, and my ear did not pick up on that. I will go back to a conversation I had with Chandler. Hey, and I'm talking about 25 minutes ago, and he said not only is it signed, he said we signed it weeks ago, and then he said something that made me think Miami at 299. But I will share this because you touched on it, and you touched on how wise it was that Connor would ask for three rounds, and I agree with you. That was wise. And you know what, Daniel? It's a very rare glimpse when Connor pokes his head up to being the real guy that once was a little boy with no money and a big dream, a sweaty gym bag, and he was willing to work hard. When you see him ask for three rounds because he's aware of where he's at, when you see him ask for three rounds because he knows it ups his chances, I respect that stuff. I like when I see that, Connor. I like when that little boy resurfaces that's got a dream and knows, hey, sometimes you got to dip your toe back in the water. Even though he's a Superman, he is not Superman. And coming off of a leg injury like that, he is not immortal. He is not divine. I mean, I like what he was saying. And I want to tell you something else when you talk about 170 pounds. The match doesn't have to stay here. And one thing that Max Holloway has long asked for is the rematch with Connor. I don't want Max going against Topuria. I'm on my own here, and I know this is a later topic, but I'm going to tell you it right now, and I don't want him going against Islam. I believe the BMF is a title. I respect the BMF almost as much as any title that's ever existed. I want Max staying put. I want him to defend that belt, and I believe if Connor was to have a good night with Chandler and Max was to put up the strap, he could get his rematch.
Yeah, that would be a fun fight, obviously, but I think Max still has goals of holding the UFC championship, and that goal runs through Ilia Topuria, which we will touch on a little bit later. But I'm excited about this. I love the idea that we get McGregor versus Chandler finally. And honestly, I'm just excited for Michael Chandler. And I hope that this payday is as grand as he expected it to be. Because, Chael, right now, if Michael Chandler would have fought over the course of the last year and a half, almost 2 years, he would have made some really, really good coin. Now this McGregor fight needs to be so big, Chael, that it makes up for the two fights that he's already missed. So while it might be a one-time massive payday, it would probably equate to about the same if he fought three fights in the time that he's waited for this fight to happen. So I hope that he makes a boatload of money and that he gets to fight the guy that he's been wanting to fight for so long. But last weekend, Chael.
Hey, and don't mistake, by the way, if I can just jump in real fast. DC, if I can jump in real fast, because I'm going to use one of the terms you love to use, a vernacular, and I'm talking about heel. Make no mistake, Michael Chandler is furious with Conor McGregor. He has not forgiven anything. He hasn't forgiven having his hands put on him two separate times during the Ultimate Fighter. He hasn't forgotten that he's waited almost 2 years. He's a father of multiple adopted children. He's got a wife. He's going away doing training camps. He's getting his yin and yang, and Conor's telling him that I'm going to go 185, or I'm even going to go box Manny Pacquiao. Chandler has been so reserved being nice, and many people will do that in a negotiation. They want to be nice until they get their way. He got his way, and the bad guy is coming. Trust me, this guy is upset. He doesn't care. Who knows now? You remember I said that.
I can't wait for it. I'm ready to see Michael Chandler have a character change. I've seen the good guy Michael Chandler, and hey, Michael, have you seen Chandler's house and his studio? I mean, it's beautiful. Michael Chandler's grass looks like he is living on the 18th green at Augusta National. I don't know how the hell the Chandlers do that in their backyard. I don't know how much they water, but it looks perfect. And when you live that type of life, you better make some money. And Michael Chandler's going to make a boatload of it when he fights Conor McGregor. Chael, when I spoke to Dustin Poirier before UFC 299, I asked him about a title shot. And many people, you know, obviously they're internet people, said to me, how could you be possibly asking him about a title shot? He just got knocked out by Justin Gaethje. But recognizing that Armand was fighting in April, Dustin was fighting in March, Dustin was fighting against Benoit Saint-Denis, Islam didn't have an opponent, Charles Oliveira was also fighting, so the entire top of 155 was fighting in April with Dustin in March. Timing, right place, right time, sometimes works for you. Dustin said to me, I feel like I'm always one big performance away from a championship opportunity. We know that now to be true, as after beating Benoit Saint-Denis, Newark, New Jersey, Dustin Poirier once again challenges for the lightweight championship of the world. Chael, is this the right decision? I feel it's the right fight in terms of who Islam should be fighting next. But I ask you, is this the right fight?
Yes. Now, I want to gloss that over by saying, had they put Sarukian in, I mean, let's just say a situation where Armand was able to get out of that match about 30 seconds in with Oliveira. He's got no boo-boos on him. To go and look at him would also be something that would make a lot of sense. Look, Islam does deserve something, and Islam has used his voice to say, I want some parity, guys. It's the only thing I've ever heard your teammate Islam Makhachev asked for is some new faces standing across from him. I think that that's very fair. For Islam to say, I'm a great fighter. I was anointed by King Khabib himself, but I'm not the biggest name. Dustin's a bigger name. So let me get in there with Dustin. I'll bring the title. He can bring the audience. I think that's fair. And I do believe when you look at somebody like Dustin, who's always ready to compete. I mean, don't forget, he was just in a title fight two fights ago, and that was against Gaethje. And people say they don't like MMA math. I love MMA math. You use MMA math all the time. You use common opponents all the time. So Justin beats Dustin, but Dustin got the jump on Max. I mean, I do think that these things matter. And what does that mean for who comes after that? I think many of us, and I'll just use Justin Gaethje. He thought he was going to beat Max Holloway. Talked about this Thursday at the press conference. He said, but I'm going to wait until later in the year. And I think he even threw up for his chance with Islam to be November at Madison Square Garden. He thought the winner of Oliveira and Sarukian was going to get this shot. But it was too long of a drawn out of a war. Not to mention, I don't know what kind of red tape Sarukian's going to be in for doing what looked like he punched a fan. He at a minimum tried to. I'm just saying, yeah, I think the Dustin is the right guy. And I think he could be real competitive. And I'll leave you with one other thing, which is MMA math. We're going to sit around and argue who's better. And it's to the point that you're weighing in on this. It's to the point that Coach Javier Mendez is weighing in on this. Who's better between King Khabib and the new champ Islam? And getting common opponents like Poirier in there with them is a great way to extend that argument.
Joe, you know, I spoke to Danny Rubenstein, and Sayat was publicly said Armand Sarukian was offered the fight after. He was offered the opportunity to fight in Newark against Islam Makhachev, and he said too soon, they're going to wait, hopefully, they get to fight him down in October in Abu Dhabi. Be the next guy. Because now he has that option, right? With Justin Gaethje losing, he has that option. If Justin Gaethje would have won, Armand Sarukian has to take the chance right now because they're going to put Gaethje in there the moment they get an opportunity. But by Gaethje losing, by Oliveira losing, he becomes the rightful number one contender. He's ranked number four, sure. But Dustin Poirier now is the only guy on the win that can fight him outside of Armand. So now Dustin gets an opportunity against the champ, Islam Makhachev. I think that this is massive for both of them. Clearly, Poirier gets another chance to win the belt. But for Islam, he gets the chance to fight a star, a bona fide star coming off of a massive knockout victory with a lot of eyes on him. So Islam can propel himself into superstardom. That's one thing he does not have. He does not have a Conor McGregor like Khabib did to get through. So he's got to beat all of those guys from that past generation that have shared the octagon with Conor McGregor and show that he is that star. But if he's going to win this fight, he's got to try to win this fight impressively, or people start to question, well, how good is Islam Makhachev really? Now, Armand Sarukian, chill, I'm going to send you a text message. He did try to punch that dude, but that dude is like in his face from the crowd, and you don't mess with Sarukian, bro. I have noticed now on many occasions, when they piss off Armand, he tries to get you. He was going to hurt Bobby Green in Austin to the point that I felt they should put those guys in different hotels. Armand Sarukian is the real deal. And honestly, that crazy mindset, chill, might be why I believe that he is dangerous to Islam. Because you and I both know the Russians don't play no games. Armand Sarukian doesn't play no games. And if you mess with them, whether you're in the octagon or you're outside the octagon, dude is going to try to make you pay for annoying him or messing with him. Armand Sarukian did that on his way out to the octagon at UFC 300. UFC 300, chill, by most accounts, was the greatest fight card we have ever seen. When you left that arena on Saturday night, what were you feeling and what were you thinking going back to your hotel?
I get up depressed. Daniel, I've never tasted alcohol in my life, but I feel like I know what a hangover is. I feel like I know what the post-fight blues are. When I get up on Sunday and something like this is done, it's very difficult for me. I woke up this morning high again. I was beaming because I was going to be reconnected with you talking about it. I mean, it's like a death, Daniel. I mean, I feel like I have to mourn the loss of 300 being behind us. Can I get just on those kinds of highs? It was really a special night, and I felt like so many things were set up for failure. It's like any great restaurant that you haven't tried before, but all your friends tell you how wonderful it is, or a movie where all the critics say it's the greatest movie ever. You always leave a little bit let down. And when Dana was promoting this, saying this is the greatest event of all time in combat history, that includes boxing and that includes every MMA organization, not just ours. Those are big things to live up to, right? I mean, that's somebody telling you that the soup and sandwich down at the new cafe is going to be your favorite ever. It was awesome, Daniel. There was more oh wow moments. And we haven't even got to Piera yet, who might have been the performance of the night. That might have been the single greatest athlete of the night. I'll save that for later. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I loved it. I thought it was everything that it was supposed to be. I thought it was everything that was promised. I was buzzing when I left that arena. And the whole night I kept going, man, can you believe how good that was? Man. And I said that to myself 5 or 6 times. I grab my iPad and I'm watching the Masters, but my mind keeps going back to the fights a few minutes ago. I was like, man, that was awesome. Man, that was awesome. And one of the most awesome moments was the BMF title fight. That was exactly what the BMF title was designed to be. And Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje absolutely delivered. Now, Chael, I've spoken to both of them since the fight. And the message from Max was he hit so hard. My leg was killing me. But I couldn't show him anything because if I showed this guy anything, he would just continue to attack it. He said he was dense and he was tough. He said, but once I got into my flow, he goes, it was hard for him to keep up. And then I called Justin yesterday. I wanted to give him a night after that knockout. And he said he's in good spirits. He said he's with his family. He said he's good to go. He said, and that's the sport, the game that we play. And him and I made an agreement to meet in the next week and a half to play golf. I told him, I said, Justin, you sound pretty good, all things considered. He goes, I love this game. And sometimes when you play this game, that is what happens. But that BMF title fight, Chael, was exactly what it was supposed to be.
The BMF title is really a peer-driven award, Daniel. The guys in the locker room, right? And fans want to know what your record is, and sponsors want to know what your record is, and the pundits want to hear what your background's in. The fellow fighters want to be viewed as somebody that can get up and go forward when it's hard, as somebody that can deal with adversity, as somebody that finds reasons to get into the fire as opposed to making excuses to get out of the fire. And that is what BMF truly does represent. And it is a unique class of guy. It is not absolutely anybody in the organization. It's a unique class of guy. And when I watched this match, from the day this fight was first rumored all the way to bell time where it went off, Justin Gaethje was the favorite. And it was a little over 2-1 that closed to just a little better than plus 120. But I'll just share with you, when I spoke to fellow fighters, Daniel, unanimously, I spoke to 8, all 8 took Max. So then I spoke to fighter number 9, 10, and 11. They all took Max. And I just said, why? And these are separate conversations. Why are you taking Max? And they believe that there was a recipe to beat Gaethje, which is he's going to come out and bring a storm. And generally, when he looks around, nobody is left standing. Max has the cardio. He's got the concrete in the chin. And he's got the volume to outwork Justin Gaethje. And I really think that volume ultimately was it. Because Justin was doing some real damage. Justin was finding that target. Dustin was slipping fairly well by his own standards, right? He blocks a lot of punches with his head. I'm aware of that. But I'm just sharing for you, Justin Gaethje really fought a very good fight. Max was just busier, right? It's a dance. If somebody's throwing out more volume, judges like that. Time starts ticking down. Good way to win a fist fight.
You know, Chael, I used that 3 times on air last week. And I said, Chael and I were talking. I go and he said, he had a bit of a nervous tick because he didn't know what to say to the fighters. So he would immediately ask him about the Holloway versus Gaethje fight. And I said, all the fighters said Max Holloway. While the pundits say Justin Gaethje, the fighters said Max Holloway. Chael, watching Max Holloway in there, it was never more clear that you cannot let him get into his rhythm. Max Holloway, when he gets into his rhythm, he is a handful. We have seen him make guys like the Korean Zombie, Brian Ortega. We have seen him make Jose Aldo and now Justin Gaethje. We made them all seem normal. These are not normal athletes. These are assassins. And when he gets to flowing, you can't stay with him. You've got to disrupt his rhythm very early, even if it's just kicking at his legs like Volkanovski did in fight number one, to not allow for him to get going. I feel when watching Max Holloway, who's one of my best buds, in there this weekend, this guy was floating, man. He was so free of any worry. He was so free of any concern. He was allowed to just go out and do the thing that he loves to do more than anything in the world, and that's fight. And he looked bigger. He looked like he was in phenomenal shape. And he was moving around that octagon so freely and so effortlessly that I was like, wow, he is fighting as good as I've ever seen him fight. Now, he did say this, Shale, and Justin didn't get credited with a knockdown in round number four. Max goes, he dropped me. He goes, he hit me on the side of my head, and I went down. He says, the first time in my career, I've actually tasted the canvas. He goes, I've never been hit like that. But he had a lot of praise for Justin Gaethje, but he was very, very happy and very appreciative of the options now that he has, because now it seems like a fight with Ilya Topuria is going to be next for the Blessed Express. And for me, I'm here for it, man.
Yeah, I know that's the direction that everybody seems to be going. I'm just trying to follow the golden rule in life, Daniel, which is to put myself in somebody else's shoes, and then guess what I would do? Look, I'm not going to 145 if I don't have to. I'd much rather be a 55-pounder. I'd much rather walk around feeling good about myself, having good energy, my whole attitude, conversations that I have on a daily life. I just don't know if Max sees it the way I do, which is it's a title either way. He's got a title that he needs to go out there and defend. I don't know that he views the BMF belt quite like that. I do. But, Daniel, I love your take on it because I never held a real belt. I only pretended to. So maybe when you are an interim champion or an undisputed champion, maybe it does feel different. But for me, I don't care what word comes in front of title. I don't care if it's featherweight, light heavyweight, interim, super fight. I don't care what you say. A title is a title for me. And I would just like to see Max stay at 155, take on a few challengers. I don't know that he has to go run down there and get in there with Topuria. And if I can leave you with one final thought, and this is maybe a weird reaction, maybe this is just personal to me, but when I watched how great Max looked, I thought, my God, I can only think of a few men that could even deal with that. And then I have to remind myself, Volkanovski dealt with it three times. I did stand back and go, wow, just how good is Volk? And maybe it is Volk that should get that immediate rematch with Topuria.
We will definitely get into that because that whole division has some sorting out to be done. But one person that is holding a real title, Chael, is Alex Pereira. You know, you can say his name like three different ways. Alex Pereira is unbelievable. I don't know that I have seen anything like this in my entire career in fighting or wrestling. You know, I have seen Cale Sanderson go into wrestling and be extremely dominant. But it wasn't fast like that. Cale was always good when we were kids and growing up. Alex was in this whole different world. He comes over to the UFC, and now, Chael, he's only got 12 MMA fights, 8 of them in the UFC. He's beaten 5 former champions. He's defended the light heavyweight championship, won the middleweight championship, headlined Madison Square Garden twice, headlined UFC 300, and he continues to look more and more impressive every single time. What do you make of this guy, Chael? I can't even think of the words to describe Alex because he really is just amazing.
Daniel, the first time they set up that octagon was in Mobile, Alabama in 1993. And we started from that day forward to learn new opinions and philosophies about martial arts. I was a wrestler at that point. Daniel, my classmates didn't treat me like I was some kind of a tough guy. I didn't walk the hallways like I was some kind of a tough guy. I didn't know that I had a skill that could translate into self-defense until Dan Severn got in there with Royce Gracie in 1994. And I'm only sharing with you, one thing that we did learn is grappling is the prerequisite. If you can't wrestle, you can't fight. And that was true. Save one exception, Maurice Smith. That was a true statement all the way up until Adesanya comes in there. And all of a sudden, then Pierre is coming over. And I think I would throw Francis into that same category. Francis had very limited grappling background and wanted to be a boxer and proved out he's pretty good at that too. I'm only sharing with you, We're seeing a changing of the guard. When I look at Alex Pereira, he defies many things that I have believed since I started studying the sport in 1993 about how well-rounded you must be. If you don't own a wrestling thing, you don't even have to do great, but you better have been on that mat. If you didn't try out for Abu Dhabi, and I just mean go and enter grappling tournaments, if you didn't do this kinds of things somewhere along the way, you're just in the practice room, you think you can learn how to defend in the octagon with grappling you did in the practice room, these things don't work. Alex Pereira is very unrefined, Daniel. That's what's scary about this guy. His best days are still in front of him.
It's nuts. You know, I think probably that is why my reaction is such. I always go, and when I'm sitting there at night and I'm going, how's he doing this? When Chael, with all due respect, because Alex and I have a great relationship, he can't wrestle. He does not know how to wrestle. When they grab his leg, he kind of just falls down. He can't wrestle.
Offensively or defensively. Correct.
No. When he can't wrestle, I'm like, how is this happening when he can't wrestle? But he has got this singular skill set that is so good that it does not matter what he can't do. He's so good at what he does that he's now the best in the world. You know, I was watching him with Jamahal Hill this weekend. And Jamahal Hill told us, Chael, every time he got a mic put in his face or anytime he went into a conversation with anyone, I am not afraid of this guy. I am not afraid of this guy. I'm going to knock this guy out. Chael, before we started doing Good Guy, Bad Guy, I had another show called DC and RC. And we spoke about this fight. And DC and RC discussed whether or not Jamahal Hill would be making a mistake by standing with Alex Pereira. We thought it was a mistake. Universally panned as an idea that you should stand with this guy, but Jamahal said he was going to knock him out. And then before the fight starts, Jamahal standing at the octagon door, Jamahal is waving at him to come into the fight. It seemed like he was going above and beyond to prove that he was not afraid of this guy. He went out there and tried to stand with him, and he got knocked out. Is this fight result a bigger praise to Pereira or an indictment on Jamahal Hill and his approach to fighting one of the most dangerous and scary guys in the entire world?
Partner, he had no other choice. I mean, I think the world of Jamahal Hill, I thought he was going to win this fight. He had no other choice. When he came out and told the world, I'm going to go stand with him, I promise I'll plant my feet and trade, what else was he going to do? What do you think he's going to hit a flying a Huracana on him or a sunset flip? Like, I mean, he's going to have to loosen him up a little bit. He's going to have to close that distance. This wasn't a masterful wrestler. I mean, we had a kickboxing world champion take on a collegiate basketball player in arguably the most meaningful fight in the history of mixed martial arts. I mean, right, that's the way that it was billed. It was on top of the bill at 300. I don't say this as an insult. I'd say if I would have told you that 10 years ago, you would not have believed me. If I would have told you that in 1997, with what little information we had at that point, at the turn of the century, you would not have believed me. And I don't think I would have even made the statement. It was so ridiculous. But Jamahal Hill needed to go out there. He needed to trade with him. Now, sure, he could do a little more footwork, and sure, he could move his head a little bit. But it's not like he had some big takedown that he could just go throw on Pereira. That's just the truth.
And when I saw in the fight, right before the nut shot, where Alex just goes, hold on, Herb. And Herb goes, okay, fight. Because what's Herb going to do? Let me make sure that you're okay, Alex. Alex, like, nope, I'll be back with you in a moment, right? Like, you stay back over here, Herb Dean. I've got my timing. Right before that, you saw Pereira almost throw the caution to the wind. He said, I got it now. I have his timing. I feel the danger level. And I don't know it if it's as great as I anticipated. So he started to attack Jamahal in a way that looked as if he didn't respect him. Now, we saw him do that with Izzy, right? When Izzy knocked him out, he was beating Izzy up, and then he got a bit reckless. But Jamahal was not able to make him pay. Chael, he hit him with this part of his hand. He got him with the last two knuckles. He didn't even get him clean, and he flatlined Jamahal Hill, who is a tough guy. We saw Jamahal Hill get his arm broken in a submission and did not tap. We've seen Jamahal Hill get hit by so many of the best light heavyweights in the world, but this guy is just different. This guy broke the punch cube record set by Francis Ngannou. I don't know how they're going to deal with him, especially knowing, Chael, that he is just an infant in mixed martial arts. He really is an amateur. When you got 12, when you got 12 fights in your entire mixed martial arts career, you should not be world class yet. This man is more than world class, and he's a star too. Because this whole thing he did, Chael, with his hands, where he's all, he doesn't show any emotion, Chael. What he's doing something like this, Chael. He's kind of like presenting a dead Jamal Hill on the ground, and he's not smiling. He's not the Chael. Listen to this, Chael. Hey, the discipline to not run around and jump up and down after doing what he did. Chael, he's doing this. Yeah, I mean.
Daniel, he called for a match in 3 weeks. He was not kidding. He's been calling for this match 3 weeks away from 300 for the last month. This isn't a joke. This isn't for attention. He will go up to heavyweight and he will challenge Aspinall if they will give him the opportunity. As a matter of fact, to get on the card Saturday night, UFC 300 that we're discussing right now, partner, he offered his longtime nemesis, Adesanya, a number one contendership if he wanted to come up. You know how unfun it would be to fight a guy for the 1,000th time? Could you even imagine that? He was willing to take on Hill. That was no problem at all. He didn't know it was an opportunity that was even going to be offered. And he was very serious about going up and taking on Tom. Now, stay with me on this real fast because, right, attitudes matter. We talk about BMFs. We got to talk about attitudes. Where would a guy like this be getting that kind of confidence? Wrestlers could do that, Daniel. We'll take on 4 or 5 guys in one day. We don't ever ask about it. We don't care. We'll take the ice off and tape our fingers and walk out there. Fighters don't do that. Kickboxers don't do that. They don't do tournaments. I mean, where did this come from? This guy is different, man. This guy is a legitimate true warrior. And by the way, let me make one final point to you, because when you want to talk about who the greats ever are, you have a very meaningful conversation. It largely comes down to who is the most dynamic, who has really shown an understanding for all aspects of the game. And then we're going to get into records and resumes and championships. But there has never been a time, and you feel free to argue with me, there has never been a time when we have a guy where we were going to say champ, 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 and we believed it could happen. Even you, partner, now, not because you weren't good enough, but you couldn't get down to 185. In all fairness, you go and look at some of these guys, they just can't make the weight class. Piera is a legitimate threat to be a champ, 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 which closes the book. That makes him the greatest fighter of all time, and you and I are sitting here admitting he doesn't even know how to fight in 50% of the game.
It's over, Chael. He won the third title. It's over, Chael. You know what's one of my biggest regrets that I'm
There's
not
no
fighting?
There is no conversation at that point.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
No conversation. The fact that I just don't get to do this one. Hey, that's the only reason I'm mad I don't fight anymore, because I want to do this shit. I want to do what he did. Here you go, man. This is just my work. Take joy in knowing I just flatlined one of the best fighters in the world. Chael, but then he goes in there, and we got to grade our call-outs, right? You and I love the call-outs. We love to react to them. So when grading Alex Pereira's call-out of Tom Aspinall, granted, there's a translator, so it's a little bit different. It's not just him saying it. But I give him an A+, because you're calling out the heavyweight champion of the world. Look, Say what you want, Chael. I get it. John Jones is the heavyweight champion of the world. But Tom Aspinall seems to be the guy that is going to lead a division into the future. He calls him out. I give it an A+ because of the courage that it takes to even call up the heavyweight champion of the world when at some point you weighed 185 and fought middleweight. Because you and I both know Tom Aspinall would have to cut off his leg and his arm to be 185 pounds. Alex calls this guy out. I give him an A+.
A+ from the bad guy as well. And I'll tell you why. If you're going to go out and you're going to say tough guy things, it has to be believable that you'll do the tough guy things. Daniel, I believed him. I believe him now. I believe he would have fought Tom on Saturday. I believe when he was campaigning for it, that 3 plus 30 equals 300 and whatever that equation was, I think he was serious. I think he wants to fight in Brazil that bad. In fact, I think the move is that Tom comes out and says, yes, hey, I've heard your mouth for the last time. I will see you in Brazil. Make Dana be the one to get in the middle of it. I mean, one thing about it, if you're a bigger guy, you cannot take that from smaller guys. And Dana's made it pretty clear he's not going to make the match. I think that Tom needs to come out with full vigor, make sure he accepts that challenge. But as far as a call out, as far as giving us something to talk about right here, you and me, biggest MMA show, Aaron, on all of ESPN. Yeah, man, he passed.
Absolutely. All right, Chael, but he was impressive. Max was the GOAT, as Max Holloway has been the GOAT in terms of excitement. But we had another exciting fight this weekend. Kayla Harrison made her UFC debut, submitted the former champion Holly Holm, got the microphone from Joe Rogan, and she said this.
I want my title next, Joe. That's what I came over here for. One thing and one thing only. So I don't care if it's Raquel. I don't care if it's Juliana. By the end of the year, I will be UFC champion.
Okay, Chael. I want to give it an A because she made her statement. She said her intentions. But I got to give her a B. I got to dock her for one thing. Don't throw Juliana's name in there. You're almost essentially giving Juliana the next title fight. Say Raquel Pennington and Raquel Pennington only. State the champion. You didn't take much damage. You can turn around very quickly and you can get a title shot. That is the only reason I'm docking her from an A. Because don't say Juliana. Because by saying Raquel or Juliana, it implies to me, the viewer, the consumer, that those two are fighting for the belt. And you have to wait. But everything else, perfect.
I see it your way. And I give her a B+. I liked what she did because she put a deadline on it. That's a risky game when you do it. But we have seen that work before. Macy Barber was going to come along and she told anybody that would listen, if she would have stayed undefeated and that birthday would have ticked around, they would have given her a chance. But she said from Jump Street, I'm going to beat John Jones's record. I'm going to be the youngest fighter to ever hold a championship. And then she would let you know when the birthday was. And as long as she stayed undefeated, it was kind of a foregone conclusion that she was going to get that shot. Now, I realize that didn't materialize, but John Jones, I'll use him as an example. He came out and said it. I'm going to be the youngest ever. Then he'd go further and talk about how old Mike Tyson was when he knocked out Holmes, grabbed his first championship. I'm just sharing for you. There was something very smart about that. She has now put the pressure on the UFC. She's made it very clear that she doesn't care who the opponent is. She deserves a lot of credit. Again, we come from a wrestling background, and we'll do what's called outstanding wrestler. In this sport, it's got to be a fight. So you got to do good, and so does your opponents. Kind of got to be a little bit competitive. As far as a performance goes, after what she went through, she in the athletic prime of her life, I would say, when she's in her early 20s, late teens, oh, and by the way, wins an Olympic gold medal, she did that at 172 pounds. I was sitting with PFL executives when we found out on a .com that she left PFL and was headed to the UFC. And the reason I tell you that, partner, that was 9 weeks ago. So she did not know. Yep. She did not know until 9 weeks ago. She made a decision to sign that contract, change her physiology, and cut down 44 pounds from her prime just for an opportunity against a former world champion. What kind of reward is that? How many people are going to be incentivized to do something that gets them locked in a steel cage with that killer and Holly Holm? That's what she wanted to do. She did it. She cut her promo. She had dominant fashion, man. That was one of the performances of the night.
It was absolutely beautiful to watch Kayla Harrison go out there and do what so many expected for so long from her, just thinking that she could be one of the best fighters in the world. We just didn't know because she was fighting the same women over and over, over in the PFL. But Chael, one woman that used to dominate the weight class is Amanda Nunes. She had a very interesting response to Kayla's win in her call out. Amanda is standing in front of her TV and she's pointing like, what's going on? Where's my name? Where's my name? And she puts the word Chama, C-H-A-M-A, something Alex Pereira has made exceedingly popular. I don't know what it means, but I guess, look, chill. That word Chama, C-H-A-M-A, has intrigued me to the point that I went and Googled the meaning of it by Alex Pereira. And I guess it has multiple meanings, but it says, let's go. So essentially, Amanda Nunes, a retired woman, is standing next to her TV going, why is my name not being called? Well, you're retired. You said you were done. Why would you be on the mind of the person inside the octagon? What did you make of Amanda's reaction to Kayla Harrison's win and her call-up?
Daniel, sadly, I've been there. Fame is a drug, and you need it so badly that when you come off of TV, you come off a walk in front of 17,000. Don't forget, Amanda was the main event of 200. Now you're looking at the glory days, and you're watching somebody else in that spotlight, somebody that came to your gym that you felt was a threat, and you left the gym because of it, and that story's been very well documented. I mean, not for nothing, for Amanda to put her nose into Kayla's moment is very unlike Amanda. But I can't tell you that I haven't done similar things. Sometimes you're at home and you're thinking, man, how'd the world forget me? I should have got on that plane. I should have taken Dana's invitation. I should have flown out there with my wife, Nina. We should have taken it in. And she didn't do that. And partner, I'll just tell you, I think it lacks sincerity. That opportunity and offer was out there at one point. Apparently, she could have had it on a date. And I'm not challenging Amanda. I'm just telling you what I saw here. Because if she wants to just wait, why go fight with Kayla now? It appears pretty clear that Kayla's going to be champion. If she doesn't get to the championship, you've proved your point. Let the whole thing go. If she does get to the championship, when you fight her, come take the belt away. What's the point in fighting her now? I didn't really get it, quite frankly. It was very out of character for the Lioness.
It was out of character. It didn't feel like Amanda Nunes, because you're the greatest. There is no question. You're the greatest female fighter we have ever seen. The greatest female fighter that we've ever seen doesn't need to go back saying, hey, if you want or have any desire to be back in the spotlight, Amanda, that door's open. All you got to do is call the people at the UFC. They will welcome you back with open arms, especially after the way the last bantamweight title fight went down. It wasn't what we all expected. Michael Jordan is never on TV going, well, I'm better than LeBron James. When Kobe Bryant was winning all those championships, Michael Jordan never got out there and said, well, I still have 6 and they only have 5. He always stayed in his lane and always let the people say, regardless of what you do, you'll never be greater than the greatest. And Amanda Nunes is in that same position. If she wants to come back, she always can. She's got to call the people up, and she would immediately be put right back into the position that she left as the champion or in the championship opportunity or a fight for the belt. So, yeah, out of character. It just was not on brand for Amanda Nunes. And I don't know that she made many decisions that didn't really represent her in the way that she intends for it to be. So, Bobby Green last weekend fought against Jim Miller. And boy, he bludgeoned Jim Miller. It was never competitive. But then Bobby Green is very exciting and entertaining. But the one thing he does is he never misses an opportunity to make a statement. And this is what he had to say after he got done with Jim Miller.
Hey, this is just getting started. Patty, how dare you? You slimy, sugary little snake. How dare you say my name? I'm coming after you. July, I'll come to your backyard with your people and kick your ass. Bobby Green, ladies and gentlemen.
JLP, I'm giving, hey, dude, I feel bad giving so many great grades because I feel like I'm fanning out, right? But I'm giving Bobby Green an A. He did everything right. He called out the young, hot guy. He put him on notice. He gave you his location. I'm going to where you're from. He had the bad words. He cussed at him. All the expletives. If there's one thing that we all know now in mixed martial arts, when calling someone out, they always tell you, we're on ESPN, you cannot use bad words. When guys use bad words, they tend to get everything they want. You remember Nate Diaz? Conor McGregor, you're working for bleep, 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 bleep. Everything I've ever wanted in my life, you took it from me. It got Nate Diaz the Conor McGregor fight. I believe Bobby Green did exactly what he needed to do. And, hey, if you're Bobby Green and you're who you are, who you fought. You've been in there with Poirier and Gaethje, and you've been in there with Tony Ferguson and everybody else. And you're looking at Paddy Pimblett, who has shown to have a little bit of a deficiency in the striking. You go fight him, and you go fight him in England because you go to try to take his thunder. I give Bobby Green an A.
I also give him an A. Bobby Green, all the other fighters, you and I, and everybody listening, we have the same level of importance towards one thing when we go to work, which is to make sure we have a job to come back tomorrow. That's more important than making sure your profits exceed your expenditures. It's more important than having a good attitude, showing up early and staying late. You got to make sure you have a job to come back to tomorrow. And that's why it's so important to have that call out, to get that conversation going, to play a hand in steering your own career partner. I want to tell you something because everybody has seemed to have missed this, except me. I'm shining up my own wheels here, but I think I am the only one that caught it. 3 days before this contest, Paddy the Batty did a call out himself. He called out Moicano, and he called out Moicano in very strong terms. He had a date, he had a location, and yes, Moicano's going to have to come to him. He did not care if Moicano won or lost Saturday night at 300. That's who he wanted to fight. By the way, Moicano was up 30 minutes after Bobby Green. And Moicano, I think, heard Bobby Green's call out, knew it was so good. He just stayed out of the way. But I do want to bring that to you because Paddy has some influence, and Paddy's made it pretty clear with his base that he wants Money Moicano. So it seems like Moicano and Bobby Green got a little business, a little back and forth in the media that I think you and I are probably going to sit back and enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. We're both going to love it. I mean, those guys both want to fight Paddy because they recognize with their resumes, if they can get Paddy Pimblett, they can go to a level of stardom that they may not have reached. Hey, chill. The next guy, he did everything right from the walkout to the fight to the call out. Chill, he called out two people. Listen to Max Holloway.
All I got to say, I'm him. I'm him, guys. Guys, there's an El Matador. He is running away from Abu at 145. Tell him to sign the gun contract. Spain, Hawaii, wherever, or even Islam. Islam is famous for defending against 45ers, right? I'm him. I'm right here.
Okay. I was going to dock him, right? I was going to dock him and give him a B because he called out two. So it was a bit confusing. But then he goes, I'll fight Ilya, Spain, Hawaii, wherever. Bam, I'm giving you an A for that. Or even Islam. And I'm like, well, now you're giving me two different guys, B. But then he goes, Islam's famous for only fighting 45-pounders anyway, so put me in there. Bang, he gets an A again. Because not only he called two, but then you insulted the champ. You've got the champ talking about you. So I'm giving Holloway an A. While it was a bit confusing, it was a lot. It was overbooked, Chael. He gave me an insult on the champion at 155. He stated the place for the guy at 145, and then they show Ilya on the camera, and Ilya looks like he could be less interested in what Max was saying because you know publicly he has said he's not fighting Max. So it was perfect. It all worked together. You insulted the heavier champ. You called out the champ at your actual weight class. They showed the champ on the screen. People in my text message were saying, Ilya looks scared. No, guys, Ilya Topuria is not afraid of anyone. He's an absolute killer. But you could see that he's like, oh my God, I got to deal with this. It was perfect, Chael.
I am going to give him a B. I'm going to see your example, and I'm going to shift you to a town called Melbourne, Australia. Main event, 57,000 live, all-time MMA gate record to take and watch interim champion Israel Adesanya versus undisputed champion Robert Whittaker. When this is done, and now they give Adesanya two belts, he made it very clear that he did not win the undisputed belt. He just defended the interim belt. And what I love so much about that is he defended his belt. The one that he had and the one he brought to the table is the interim, and he is now arguing that it is better than the undisputed, and the proof is that I have both, and I'm saying that it's better. The reason I take you down that road, Max now has a title. Max now has a belt. I'm not sure, Daniel. I mean, I think that you understand, but it comes with all the financial participation. There's a reason there's a strap, and there's a reason it's five rounds. It is an actual title. But if you want to look at it like the Olympics compared to the World Championships, they only come along every 4 years, so I guess it's more coveted. I don't know why Max is calling anybody out. First thing he does when he calls them out is lets them know that his belt's better than his belt. And second, he's a champion. He's got the right to participation and he's got the right to defend it. And they need to start coming to him. Ilya Topuria should be talking about, I'm going to fight Max if he comes down here. He should be talking about, Max better get his ass down here and he better bring that beautiful belt with him because I'm going to take him both and his reputation and all of his money. That's the way these things get done, Daniel.
Absolutely. Max Holloway made some money last weekend too. He collected two bonuses. So he made $600,000 extra as he heads back to Hawaii with the BMF title and a whole bunch of money. But Chael, I agree. It was tremendous, man. And Ilya Topuria, for the record, guys, have said he will see Max before the end of the year, and he intends to be the first person to crack the legendary chin of Max Holloway. You know, when UFC 300 was announced, I spoke to many people, and we argued about the quality of the card. And it's not this. And I said to them, I said, the only reason you guys are knocking on this card is because there is no Osh moment. There is no Osh. Brock Lesnar's back. Holy cow. But on Saturday, we had some of those. Listen to what the boss had to say after the fight.
People always ask me what I do. I sell holy shit moments for a living, right? That was the ultimate holy shit moment of all time. If you were at home, if you were in a bar, or if you were here live tonight, there's no bigger holy shit than that.
Oh, I loved it. Hey, let me jump in on this theme, Daniel. Can I jump in on this? Well, I love what he just said there, and I have three as well. And I'm not just going to go from 300, from the history. I'm going to use it all and encompass this because that's largely what the theme of 300 was. I'm going to start with Amanda Nunes. I believe it was 61 seconds. That's right at the top of my head when she walked across that cage and went fisticuffs with Chris Cyborg and put her out. That was shocking. Nobody's ever walked Cyborg down. Nobody's out-muscled Cyborg. Nobody's ever finished Cyborg. Nobody's ever not been afraid of Cyborg. I'm going to lead with that one. And let me tell you, what my number two is, which I'm just going to need a quick reminder. Air, do we got it? What is it? All right. Oh, Daniel, I bet this is on your list as well. Conor McGregor over Jose Aldo in 13 seconds. Now, Conor McGregor had played the ultimate mental warfare, but we just saw it start to work. And I didn't think it could work on anybody like Jose Aldo, but Jose had never been in a position like that. And Conor started to become the alpha male at the press conferences. He got to where he would look and say things to Jose and Jose would stare down at the ground. And that's where you start to realize, I'm going, hey, wait a minute. This guy's got a big mouth and two fights in this company. You haven't lost in 11 years, Jose. But when he went down in 13 seconds, that was one of those incredible moments. And then number one, this is not hyperbole. I was training partners with Randy Couture, and he was a mentor of mine. When I found out that he was returning from retirement at 44 years old, and he was going to take on Tim Sylvia in his first match back, I found out from Mark Ratner what hospital the UFC was using so that I could make sure I had flowers there ready for Randy when he got admitted. Randy came out 5 seconds in through something called an inside cut kick. I trained with the man every day of my life. I've never heard him say the words inside cut kick, but that's what he used as a setup. Came over the top of the right hand and put the giant down to the canvas and proceeded to pummel him for the next 24 minutes and 55 seconds.
That was good. That was good. I like all three of those. Obviously, they are big moments in mixed martial arts history, but Uncle Chael, I got to tell you, I'm about to crap on this list. Because my list is just a lot better. I mean, it is a lot better as you listen to these. Oh, my God. At number three, Chael, I got a bit of a tie. Do you remember when Anderson Silva front kicked Vitor Belfort in the face? A snap kick right to the face?
Yes.
We had seen Vitor for years.
By the way, Daniel, why do you have everybody a tie? Is that an issue that you don't understand the assignment or you just don't know how to do a 3A, 3B? Why can't you pick
relax
one?
Relax. Just relax, Chael. Just relax. And then Holly Holm. Remember when she kicked Ronda in the face? Ronda had not been a full fight. Ronda had taken the best fighters in the world and made them look like they were kindergartners. She went to Australia and in front of 60,000 people, she kicked her in the face to knock her out. I don't know if I've ever, and I was an active athlete at the time, been more surprised at a result in a fight. At number two, Chael, do you remember when Juliana Pena beat Amanda Nunes? After what we had seen Amanda Nunes do, what we had seen Amanda Nunes become, I remember sitting next to the octagon, and my voice made a sound, Chael, that I don't think I've made since I was an 8-year-old boy watching He-Man in Lafayette, Louisiana, whenever He-Man picks his sword up to the ceiling and then he hits his tiger and he becomes a super tiger. I had never made that sound until Juliana Pena was beating Amanda Nunes and about to choke her out. It was the most crazy moment I'd ever experienced because I had never seen an underdog, a person that was so expected to lose, go out and do exactly what they said in the way that Juliana Pena did. It was crazy. And then last week, Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje. For them to be in there and Max Holloway to take that chance, because it worked out, Chael, but doing that thing with 10 seconds left against a guy that hits as hard as Justin Gaethje really did put Max in danger. Hell, we saw it earlier in the fight. Jalen Turner had Renato Moicano done. He tried to create a moment, and then he gets submitted. Max could have been on the receiving end. Max could have been knocked out. So the risk versus the reward, ultimately the reward paying off in the way that it did, that is the biggest holy shit moment I've ever seen in UFC history. I've never seen anyone do that. We have seen some great things, Chael.
Did you just curse?
We have never seen anything like that.
Did you just curse on this show? You're supposed to be the good guy. And by the way, don't think I didn't catch you earlier. There was a low blow and you called it a nut shot. Do we say nut shot? Are we like, do we have that kind of relationship with our audience over here, Daniel?
Well, what happens is like there's a button, right? And this is why, hey, Chael, sometimes we talk over each other because there's a little bit of a delay. That's what the delay is for. The delay is for whenever I say a bad word,
they have the ability
to press a button that goes beep, and then you hear holy beep. You won't hear the cuss word when the show comes out, Chael. So, yeah, that's kind of how this thing works. But that's a list, Chael.
Can I tell you, your list does bring back some very incredible moments. And I would agree with you that your list is better than my list, except that would make both of us wrong. And you want to know something, partner? I left you off it just because I didn't know how you would feel to see that. But your night when you stopped Stipe Miocic, all the way down to them ushering Stipe out and bringing Brock Lesnar in, and Brock tried to put hands on you and wasn't quite sure where this whole thing was going to go. Then your boxing coach doesn't understand we're trying to sell tickets. I mean, I thought he might go out there and go a little bit too far with it, but I only offer that to let you know I love Coach. But I'm just letting you know how well I remember this. You know, or even when John Jones tried to make up with you, or when you came back and told me you were the kid in the bracket. Like, there has really been a number of incredible moments, man. I will tell you this about myself, just to personalize, but my time in this sport as a fan is not over. I started as a fan in 1993 and I will end as a fan. And when I was at 300, I haven't even started to diminish. I think I've started to like our sport more.
Isn't that crazy how with time we are enjoying this thing even more than we did? Because it really felt, Chael, like even though we're at 300, it feels like it's only getting started. It really does feel like the sport of MMA is just getting going. And I'm just so happy that you and I, we get to be a part of it. And we get to do this because I've never had more fun doing this show than this. But yes, Rosendo was not in the writer's room. Rosendo did not get the script. So when Brock pushed me, he comes in there and pushes Brock. The dude's 5'2" tall. But yes, that was a great moment also. Chael, once again, great show. Guys, Chael and I are off on Thursday. Look, I get it. You're going to miss us. But you guys should feel good for us because here at ESPN, they don't give us days off. They don't give us a day off whenever we have a schedule. So feel good for you boys that we get a Thursday to relax with our families and just kind of do our thing. And Chael, before we go, bro, you have done a lot of great things in this sport. But this Hall of Fame, welcome, my brother, because you deserve it. Like I said at the beginning of the show, you helped to move this show forward. And for every Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz, and all the others, it does not happen without Chael P sitting at press conferences and using those post-fight interactions to make moments. Because I know for a fact, Chael, that I did it once I saw you did it. And when you move the sport forward, you deserve to belong amongst the greats. And that's exactly where you're going to be in July or June when you go into the Hall of Fame. Congratulations, my brother.
That was beautiful. Thank you, Daniel.
You're the man, Chael. Guys, every Monday and Thursday, catch all new episodes of Good Guy, Bad Guy. You get us wherever you get your podcasts. Get us on ESPN2, ESPN+, YouTube, and wherever you hear your podcasts as Chael has exited the show because I made him cry. I made him cry with my great tribute to him. Until next time, guys, till next Monday, I'm Daniel Cormier. That's the back of Chael Sonnen Scream. We'll see you next time. Peace.